a charter member and past president of the Canadian Wind Energy Association, a former director of the Clean Air Strategic Alliance in Alberta, which is a watershed or an airshed partnership, and a member of the Association of Power Producers of Ontario, serving on the Subcommittee of Environment and Green Power. He's one of the three founders of Vision Quest Wind Electric, and he points out to me that green energy is actually a copyrighted name of TransAlta. Now, he's going to talk to us today about deregulation. We're all very aware of deregulation here in Lethbridge as our electricity bills have bounced back and forth from one provider to another. And the topic today is deregulation, friend or foe of green energy in Alberta. Let's welcome our guest today, Jason Edwards.
Thank you very much, Luella. Thank you very much, Luella. Let me just try this one again. All right, there we've got it. I'll just eat it. Thank you very, very much for the honor of inviting me here. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you about this topic. And I think you're going to be a bit surprised about what I'm going to be saying about deregulation in terms of green power, in terms of wind energy here. Now, I do apologize that you can't see everything on the screen that I'm going to be trying to show you, so I'll try to fill in the best I can as I switch the screen displays here. So what I'm going to talk about is a little bit about our new name, TransAlta Wind, because we just changed our name this month from Vision Quest Wind Electric to TransAlta Wind. I'm going to give you a bit of a background about wind energy, not that anybody here really needs a background. I'm going to talk a little bit about the state of wind energy in the world and then bring it down to the history and state of it in this province, in Alberta, because we've been a real leader in Canada. And then I want to talk about some of the things that I find really interesting, the relationship between agriculture, tourism, and wind energy. And then I'm also going to talk about some of the challenges, some of the problems we encounter and how we have been addressing those. We've got some very interesting activity going on in this province, working towards solutions to some of the technical challenges of getting on the grid. And I'll give you my crystal ball guess for what's going to be out there in the future. I have lots of really pretty pictures of which you're going to see the sky of, it looks like. First of all, let me tell you about the company I work for, TransAlta. You're all familiar with TransAlta from the old days when it provided electricity. TransAlta is now simply a power generation company. It makes electricity and it sells it wholesale. And so it's highly contracted. It's got mostly contracts out there, but you may not know that it's not only in Canada, but it's in the US, Mexico, and Australia. It's been around a long time. Many of you remember it as Calgary Power. So it's been over 90 years. There's lots of facilities out there, and it's got a growing portfolio in renewables, particularly the hydro plants from way back when, now wind and some geothermal in the U.S. Now, our little part of TransAlta is TransAlta Wind. We were called Vision Quest. It's a company I and two friends started 10 years ago last November. TransAlta invested in us in 2000 and they bought us at the end of 2002, and that's been a good thing for us because it takes an awful lot of money to build wind farms and it takes an awful lot of people to put these projects together. So this has really helped us a lot. We are, I believe, still the largest player in Canada in the wind energy industry with 220 wind turbines. And I'm sure if you've gone towards BC border, you've seen virtually every one of them. And we generate about 189 megawatts, which is something about a little bit larger than the city of Lethbridge in terms of energy. One of my favorite pictures is the three of us who started the company standing on one of the wind turbines in an 80 kilometer an hour wind. They won't let us do that anymore for insurance reasons, but I think it's a neat picture because it tells you how large the machines were. And from the grins on our faces, if you can see it, you can see how proud we are of what we're able to do at the Castle River Wind Farm there. There's actually wind turbines at the bottom of that picture. Well, this is the growth of our company, and it starts way over at the left, as you'll see again later, at the start of deregulation. And I'll get into that more. So we've added more facilities in Alberta every year. to grow up to that green line of 189 megawatts. Now, we haven't added any projects since 2004, but we've been working very hard all across the country, and I do anticipate an announcement possibly as early as next week about a new project. So just keep your ears out for that. And if you're holding TransAlta stock, maybe that's a good thing, eh? But we'll see. This is an aerial shot of the Castle River Wind Farm. It shows it on one of those few weeks that it's green. You can see how they are laid out. Let me just tell you a little bit about how wind energy works. It's actually solar energy, and the reason for that is it's related to the uneven heating of the Earth's surface. When the Earth's surface heats, it heats the air above it and gets lighter and rises. Cooler air comes in to replace that. Very simply, that's what it is. It happens on a large scale with things like the trade winds, and it certainly happens here. You see it in the summer when it's not so windy in the morning. It warms up in the afternoon, and the wind picks up right after lunch. That's the most common way that you notice it. We do find that in the summer particularly, there's daily variations. It's windier in the afternoon, less windy in the evening or at night. In the winter, this time of year, it just tends to blow, unless we get one of those really big Arctic highs, and then sometimes there's no wind at all. We do have seasonal variations. It's windier in the winter than the summer. I'm telling you all things you know. But that's when we make most of our energy, and then most of our money is in the winter. It is affected by topography. You'll notice that a lot of wind turbines get put on higher places, either plateaus or ridges. We ourselves, we kind of shun ridges for a variety of reasons. But one of the challenges, of course, is that wind is invisible. So it's a little bit like seismic exploration. You're looking at something that you can't see. So how we measure this is by putting up weather stations. And you'll see a lot of these towers with anemometers, wind meters, throughout southern Alberta, because there's a lot of activity here. It's just like seismic now. There's people putting up these towers and exploring for wind all over the place. Now, we all know that although when we think of windmills, we sometimes think of these kind of pieces of machinery, but of course that's not what we're talking about anymore here. What we're talking about are typically the horizontal axis wind turbines, the ones that are the familiar ones west of here. You may have seen some of the vertical axis or egg beater types. We don't have any of those in Alberta anymore. And of course, there's always somebody coming out with a new invention with something that's a little bit different. They bolt something on the front or they bolt something on the back. And in our experience is only, I'm showing you these pictures and you can't even see them. Anyway, the horizontal axis ones are the ones that have been commercially successful. This is a picture of the inside of one of the machines. And at the front is the where the rotors bolt on. So this would be the rotor hub. And they have variable pitch, so they change direction all the time to respond to the wind. You can see the motors to do that. There's a big thrust bearing here. You can imagine these take a lot of load when the wind is pushing on it. A gearbox that speeds it up, and then it goes into a generator. This is all in the box up at the top, which we call the nacelle. There are motors here that steer it on the tower to face the wind. It uses information from a weather station at the back, talking to the computer, so that it knows when to turn. Every time the wind shifts about 5 degrees, the motors will kick in and it'll turn. These are incredibly automated machines, and they even have the capability that when they do have a problem, they will actually call our technicians on their phones, send them a text message, and say, I'm in trouble, can you come and help me? What I wanted to show here is where Canada is in the worldwide state of generation for wind. But it also shows how wind has grown. We're talking megawatts on the side here. Alberta has a net generation capacity in all of the province for all sources of about 8,500 megawatts. So world wind energy capability is now about 10 times that. Just to compare, Ontario has 24,000 megawatts of generation capacity, all forms. That's just the capacity. That's the maximum output it can do. Now, on the list that you can't see on the right, it shows that Germany is the largest producer with 19,000, Spain 11,000, US 11,000, India 5,000, little Denmark 3,000, and Canada, we've had a record year this year. We're up to 1,251 megawatts. We're still tiny in the world scene. This shows where the installations are in Canada, and I got to tell you that I have to almost check this map daily because there is so much activity going on. So you can see very quickly some of these locations are taking over Alberta. Alberta is shown here with 354 megawatts, but there's 319 in Ontario, there's 212 in Quebec, but those two provinces are adding hundreds of megawatts of wind more, and so there's going to be a huge amount. BC has just awarded contracts for 325 megawatts, PEI for 40, Manitoba has a goal of 1,000, Ontario plans to add 2,200 more, Quebec 3,000 more. So very shortly, we're going to be catching up to some of those European countries. The size of wind turbines has grown. When I started my career in wind energy, we were down here with 15-meter rotor diameter machines, 55 kilowatts. Now, if you look at that machine that's immediately west of Fort McLeod, the one all by itself, that is a 90-meter rotor diameter. 90 meters, imagine that. That is goal line to goal line in a Canadian football field. Largest rotating machinery in the world. That one is capable of 3,000 kilowatts, or 3 megawatts. So it's one of the largest machines in North America. Well, and this was a key slide for you to show the growth of wind energy in Alberta. And if I knew how to make this come up, I would show you. We did have a program that was announced by Premier Getty in 1988, which was to put a test for some renewable energy in Alberta. And his program set aside just over 100 megawatts of capacity on the grid for water, wind, biomass, any renewable energy sources that wanted to try that. And most of it came out as wind. And so we had about, 30, 35 megawatts of wind got installed under that program. That was prior to 1994. And so one of those is the Cowley Ridge Wind Farm, which many of you have seen with those much older machines, much smaller, and the lattice towers and the black blaze. So that was, and that's still going. It's a very successful program. But what happened in 1996 was the passing of deregulation for wholesale electricity generation. Now that meant more competition, more opportunity. And I have to tell you that my first impression of deregulation then was that we were out of business. Everybody would only choose the cheapest form of electricity that was going to be coal, and there was no way we were going to have any success. But my partner, Fred Gallagher, said, I don't think it's like that at all. We haven't seen that in other industries. What it means is choice. So we did a market analysis, and what we found out is that there were lots of Albertans, lots of Canadians, who wanted to buy wind power, wanted to buy green power, but couldn't because the regulators, under regulation, wouldn't buy anything but the cheapest source of electricity, which was coal-fired. So, when deregulation came, we worked very hard marketing, we picked our sites, and we managed to find customers for 1997, and we put in the very first new generators, two wind turbines, one at Castle River Wind Farm and one down by Cardston, or Hillspring, actually. This really caught on. We were able to sell lots of green power, and we've added a lot in the province since then. So these bars, that arrow shows 1996 with a little wee bar, and every year there's been more and more happening. So that by the end of 2006, as you saw earlier, there's about 380 megawatts in Alberta. We anticipate this year in 2000, just from existing approved projects that are already under construction or under development, we will reach approximately 510 megawatts here in the province. So it's continuing to grow. So, prior to deregulation, we couldn't get on unless we had a special program like the Getty one from 1988. With deregulation, there's opportunity, as former Energy Minister Steve West once said to me, everybody has a same equal opportunity to go broke. And he's right. so we now can harness true demand, supply, come up with new and innovative products, and try to sell them. wind in Alberta grew faster than any other of the provinces because we had this market and because the market responded to the products. In fact, we just demonstrated the success of wind so much that other provinces that couldn't harness the market forces have now used policies and plans and goals to achieve what this province did in a free and open market environment. By the way, I don't like my bill any better than any of you, and I don't understand it any better than you, but I do like that we can make some money off of wind and make clean energy to do it. So what are the benefits? Well, partnership with agriculture, local benefits in terms of employment and taxes, tourism, environmental benefit, obviously, and investments. One of my favorite ones is the relationship with farmers and ranchers. It's like putting a second cash crop in for them with no input costs at all. Very, very low impact on farm and ranch operations. We take up about 1 to 2% of their land, but we're there for a long time and we pay well. In fact, it helps preserve farms, farm way of life. We've had families tell us that they're staying on the farm because of the extra money that they get from the wind turbines, and that's good. I want to mention tourism. There is concern in areas where new wind farms are going in that the wind farms will drive tourism away. That is not what we have seen in Alberta. In fact, we've seen the opposite. The Chamber of Economic Development and the Visitor Information Center in Pitcher Creek tells me that 4 out of every 5 visitors there want to know about the wind farms. And there's lots of visitation. We've even put a special pull-off in at the McBride Lake Wind Farm with interpretive signs. And this last year, we released a tour, an audio tour, that was available in Lethbridge, in Fort McLeod, lots of places. You can pick up a CD, put it in your car, and drive from Fort McLeod to past Pincher Creek and learn all about the wind farms. It was such a success, we've been absolutely wiped out. But you can actually still go to our website, and I'm sure all of you have iPods. So you can download the tour, put it on your iPod, or burn it onto your own CD. Or you might want, you know, one of your kids or grandkids to help you do it. This is how I do it. But we do have it available, and except for the one chapter on the egg beaters, it still stands very well, and it's had a lot of success. We've had some challenges. We have to be concerned about birds, bats, sound and visual impact. We've got some challenges with the market rules and interconnection, and we've certainly run out of transmission in this area. Let me deal with each of these in turn. Get them all up here. New wind farms, like wind farms and birds, have the potential for collisions and mortalities. We've spent an awful lot of time learning how to sight them to avoid that, and I think we've done a really, really good job. Our new wind farms have extremely low collision rates, on the order of 0.2 birds per turbine per year. Now that's very, very low. The North American average is about 2 birds per turbine per year. But we are discovering that there's some challenges with bats, particularly at one of our wind farms, the Summerview one just north of Brockett. We've been very fortunate to have a very good team of researchers from the University of Calgary working with us last year and again this next coming year. And we're starting to discover quite a few interesting things about what's going on there. And we're pretty sure that by this time next year, we'll have a mitigation plan so that we can cut down on those collisions an awful lot. In terms of sound, how many of you have visited any of the wind turbines, been up close? Let me ask you to put up your hands again if you found them to be noisy. Maybe one. Well, most people, I think, are surprised at how quiet they actually are compared to what they might have thought, especially when we call them turbines. Certainly our guidelines are to have at the nearest residence the sound level at about the level of a library reading room that's outside the house. So by the time you're inside, we'll never promise that they're inaudible, but we will promise to meet those guidelines. And we've been fortunate that the EUB has come and measured our facilities after installation and found that it's worked okay. In terms of visual impact, very tough. We have to put these up in the wide open spaces where the wind catches them and they are going to be visible. What we as a company do is keep them off ridges so that we don't skyline, and we try to use non-reflective matte coatings with as neutral a color as we can. Now that's tough to find one color that works in this country. You know, we've got a bit of snow on the ground now. There's a few weeks of green. Most of the time the ground is buckskin colored. Unless we've got fog, it's pretty hard to hide these things. But we do try to reduce them, and we use a lot of computer simulations to see what they look like from all angles to help us do that. Now, one of the things that's been a real challenge in the last 2 years is the fact that we've grown as an industry, and the people that run the transmission system here are suddenly going, uh-oh, there's a lot of wind. What does this mean? What will we have to do? And so the market has to adapt a little bit. After all, wind can't follow the rules that other generators can. They can't call us up and say, would you put on 100 megawatts tomorrow at 3? We can't do it. If the wind's there, we'll be there. We've just initiated in this province a wind forecasting pilot, which will inform the system operators, and we think that that's going to make a big difference. There'll be more announcements about that coming hopefully later this month, and I think that we'll see that this will go a long ways to addressing this. We've also been working with the transmission people to come up with a series of tools that will help implement wind a lot more. And in fact, it used to be that when the grid went down, we were told to get off as fast as we can. And that's changing. What they actually want is us to support the grid now. And so this technical line at the very bottom that you can't see anyway, called low voltage ride through, is something where we're going to have to stay on and help the grid even when the voltage on the grid actually falls from the operated voltages right down to zero. And so we're able to do that with new technology now. So that's sort of good news. Transmission concerns are a big, big problem. We have had little or no building of new transmission lines in this province for close to 20 years.